Thank you for joining me.
No problem.
How are you doing?
I'm okay.
Yeah.
You have the cutest hair. I love how you style it all the time. Your hair looks a little different today, but I love it. You always have like such
Thank you. This is the long version.
I have delayed my
hairdresser appointment because I don't want to do it every like 2-3 months. So now it's long and it's dark. But
it looks
fun.
Good on you.
Thank you.
You look good with dark hair or with your highlights.
Before I go to Vegas, I'll do it again.
Are you speaking in Vegas?
Mm-hmm.
I knew it. Yes, I thought you were. Mm-hmm. I'm so excited. This is going to be my first conference. So
you're coming?
Yes.
Awesome.
I'll be there. Yeah. So I've never been to one before, so I don't really know what to expect. So, but you've spoken at all kinds of conferences. You spoke in Prague, right? Prague and...
I've been to 15 of them in the last year.
In the last year?
And in 2024, I did 15.
I didn't know there were so many.
Not all of them were Bitcoin. Some of them were like Liberty in Our Lifetime. It's like a freedom conference. And some of them were mine, like the ones that I have set up. In places that I go to or in Israel.
Where are you right now?
I'm at home in Israel. Yeah.
Okay, that's where you're from. Okay, I wasn't sure if you lived there. That's amazing.
I'm kind of, I'm in a transition phase to becoming a digital nomad.
Really?
You could say that I already am because I'm spending at least half of my time outside of Israel.
Mm-hmm. So, how does it feel traveling so much?
It's different. It's really different. Like are we on, by the way? Are we like,
I'm just, you know what? We're just, I'm recording,
but
I'll clip out parts. But what I love about us talking is because when we talked about your hair, because I'm a hairdresser, I feel like I love the conversation to feel like you're going to get your hair done. And you're going to see the person, but you know what I mean?
You're a hairdresser.
I'm a hairdresser. So when you go get your hair done with my customers, they enjoy not just getting their hair done, but they enjoy our talks. Like we always have these really good talks.
For sure.
Is that how you feel with your hairdresser?
Yes, for a long, long time. But many of the people that like she's amazing. I've been with her for 12 years because of how much I appreciate her. And love her. We don't necessarily agree about everything, but we can talk.
Yeah,
and that is so important.
That's the thing that's like amazing about something like that is, you know, people don't like to have conversations a lot. They don't like to disagree. They just want to stay in their bubble online and see people, you know, that agree with them. But when you go to talk to people in real life, you might not agree with things, but it's good to try to have a conversation. And a lot of people don't get that in the real world. So that's what I love about this show is that it brings some of my experience talking to people who may not agree or just how, you know, you find out stuff about people that normally they wouldn't even think is interesting, but everybody else finds it very fascinating. So we get to just find out who you are, but just have a talk, you know? So I just want to talk about Bitcoin.
Absolutely. And you know, one of the things that she's really good at, my hairdresser, is connecting people. So because she speaks to so many people and get to know them and what they're up to and you know, what they need, she then makes connections and then people get like really valuable partnerships or, you know, just like relevant people to meet through her. That's pretty cool.
It's a networking thing in a way, because my mind goes in tangents, but I saw this movie that cracks me up. It's a movie with Adam Sandler and Jennifer Aniston, and I think it was called Murder Mystery, but it just made me and my husband laugh when we were watching it, because she said, oh, I have a customer that does this or a customer that does that. And he goes, don't give me that hairdresser shit, because every hairdresser is like, I know somebody that does something, you know, like we know all different types of people. So it's just really funny. I thought that was hilarious because it's just, I am like that too. I'm always saying, oh, yeah, I have the most interesting people that do the, you know, most random things that connect to a lot of conversations. So yeah, I just want to keep this free flowing. I want to talk about Bitcoin and find out about you. I did a little bit more of a background, like finding out about your life, which is crazy.
Crown check.
Yeah, background check. I had to, you know, figure out what your history is.
But you want me to, I'm sorry that I rudely didn't answer your question before. I can do that later. Like what it's like to be a digital nomad.
Do that. Yes. Let's hear.
Okay. So, I mean, at first it was so much fun to just, first of all, I just wanted to get the hell out of here, of Israel, because of how intense it is. And with the war and everything that's going on, it served me very much. Then it was the beginning of my like new life. Like all I do is do public speaking and carry my message forward so that people can help themselves through the information that I convey. So it became like, okay, it's part of my mission. I have to keep doing that. And then came the stage of, okay, so how do I went through a lot of, I think, understandings about the whole notion of home and what is home and where are you at home and what does it mean to feel at home? And, you know, a lot of things that we carry are not even directly related to our current life or reincarnation. They may be ancestral or generational or, you know, cultural that we carry. And so that was kind of an invitation to look through all these things, like what does it mean to be Jewish? What does it mean to be Israeli? What does it mean to be a dissident voice to some of those institutions? What does it mean to say things that people don't necessarily want to hear? Or when you say them, someone has something to say or criticize you. And is there a difference when you're here in Israel to when you do this when you're outside of home? The short answer is no.
Well, I feel that your upbringing, your religion, your nationality, like me, I'm Greek Orthodox. So Orthodox means strict. Like they never change, you know. Yes. A lot like the Jewish people, the Jewish religion is, you know, the same, like you don't change. And I relate to that because
it's the same, just a nuance. It's the same as the Jewish Orthodox. It's not the same as any Jew, right?
Yes.
Because right. There are so many streams in Judaism that people just put everything in one basket. There's Israel, there's Jews, and
No, but yes, it's a lot of different, like Orthodox just means we don't like with my religion, it's growing up, it was, you can't cross your legs in church. You know, you have to wear a skirt to church. Everything is how it's been. The way you take communion has been, you know, so certain things are these man-made rules, these man-made ideals that you grow up believing and following. And I have my own spiritual beliefs and I, you know, that is part of who I am, but I feel like we, as we grow up and we are, you know, you're a digital nomad, you move around, you figure out parts of life that you understand better. And now that you see the truth and you see what things are like, things that have been told to you that you believe, you know, are lies now, your ideals change over time. So even though you think that home is where you have your traditions, your values, you know, where you consider home, you change as you mature and you realize the truth. So I think the same thing, like you, home feels to me like Bitcoin. Like I feel like Bitcoin is home because wherever that is, it can be anywhere. And I feel that anybody who understands that and sees the truth in that and sees that there is this big lie that's going on and this big thefts in the systems around the world and the politics and even, you know, even, you know, churches and a lot of people in power of any sort, you know, to me, home is some people that agree with your beliefs, you know, and our belief is that we want truth. So that's where we align. And I feel that's why you're okay with probably being a nomad, because you are spreading this message of truth, not just only Bitcoin, but just about other things that you see, sharing people's voices on your podcast. You know, you could do that with people from around the world too. And And I think that that's so powerful.
I totally agree with you about being an Orthodox, like, and even if you're not religious in any way, like the orthodoxy, the inability to change and hold on to pre-existing beliefs or pre-existing habits, this is one of the most lethal habits today. I mean, if you don't have the ability today to unlearn things and break through some of your existing beliefs in light of new information that's coming out, in light of new witnesses or new testimonies that are coming out, then you are stuck, because we are in a fast-paced evolutionary process at the moment for humanity, and we are all kind of elevating our consciousness, and those who don't have the capacity to break old habits, old beliefs, they will suffer, because more and more we will suffer if we don't allow ourselves to let go of what we already know and kind of surrender to this new wave of information, new wave of consciousness that is surrounding us. So I really believe that breaking out of orthodoxy these days is super important. That's one. Two, speaking of orthodoxy, just to give you an example of how what we are experiencing is so mad, is so crazy. Amount of truth that is coming to light is so overwhelming. Most people cannot handle everything that's coming out at the same time. So speaking of orthodoxy just reminded me, because this is happening these days, like in the past week, 2 weeks here in Israel, we have been witnessing a phenomena where young women are coming out and speaking out, giving testimony about their childhood in the Jewish Orthodox community, where they've been abused in, you know, satanic rituals and child sacrifice, child abuse, sexual harassment, sexual crimes, like the worst of the worst stuff. And I'm sorry if I'm like making And so women fucking, you know, brave and courageous are coming out and saying they may have since their childhood, they have grown out of orthodoxy, so they're not religious anymore, and they are obviously going through therapy and stuff, and so they have the courage, and one started, and then the second one, it gave the courage to more women to show up. I mean, there have been whistleblowers for a while, like people who anonymously have reported about this stuff, and we know about pedophilia in many different communities in Israel, not just the Jewish Orthodox community,
all over the world. Yeah.
But now this is coming out with faces, with like real people, real figures, even a political figure, like the child of a political figure is talking about her mom and dad both doing that to her when she was a child. And
that's so important, because it's so important because of the bravery that you mentioned. Those people would normally, if you say something, either you're going to make your, first of all, same thing with the Greek religion. It's if you come out and say something, it's going to be a shame on your family, a shame on, you know, you don't want to bring this bad, light to your family. You don't want people to know the truth, but it's also scary for you because you don't know who might attack your family or, you know, your life could be destroyed if you speak.
Absolutely.
Up,
the fact that they are no longer in that community gives them strength. If they were a part of it, and they do share about their upbringing, saying that when they were kids and it was happening and they tried to find rescue with some people, like older people, like grown-ups, they would tell them of what's happening and the hope of them helping them, they would constantly be labeled as, you know, you're making this up, this is not happening, why are you doing that to your family, and ridiculed and everything. And today they're grown-ups already, so it's, I guess they have the power to do it, which is quite amazing.
Yeah. Too many people have they dismiss children and they say you have to listen to kids, you know, because kids tell the truth, even though kids lie a lot too, but kids are, what they are telling you is how, even if they can't explain to you that they're being abused, even if they say, hey, something was kind of weird, but they don't understand that it was weird because maybe they're too young and naive they're manipulated to think that things are normal and maybe they caused it or maybe it's their fault somehow. But for a kid that's naive, that doesn't really understand, even if they try to tell you, you kind of have to read between the lines and say, instead of saying, okay, I'm busy now, what are you even talking about? That's crazy. You have to actually sit there and take the time and listen to the child and say, why are you saying these things? What exactly happened? Giving your kid the time but people just dismiss them thinking you're just making up stories. You're a child. But you should listen to kids. And I'm glad that this is happening as they're growing up and telling their truths and showing that these systems that you believe so hardcore in, that people think is truth. They think that no matter what, this is our religion, this is our what we've grown up with, it is right and it's something that we'll never question, is so wrong. And that's why you're saying it's toxic, because people could get away with evil, horrible things. And because under that umbrella, they can do that. And it's disgusting.
I'm with you. And look, sometimes children exaggerate. Sometimes they make things up. But at least you got to give them the time of day to sit down and figure out why they are saying what they're saying and if there is anything behind it. So I'm totally with you that we need to listen more. And if they are making it up, if they are exaggerating, then we also maybe need to check why they are saying what they're saying. I mean, is there anything that is missing for them? I mean, this is happening all around the world, but it's happening here. It's coming out. And, you know, as much as it's like the most difficult thing ever, I'm kind of glad that it's coming out. The newspaper that I write for from time to time, it's the only newspaper I know here that is non-censored and talks about or writes about anything. They have been tracking and following that subject for a while and have been interviewing a lot of people about this topic. So, you know, I, you know, hats down to those people who are kind of working in this field to expose these lies and these atrocities, because the sick people who are doing what they're doing in that area need to be afraid. They need to know that the truth is out to get them, that the world is changing, that people are talking, that the truth is coming out. They need to be afraid. And I'm no ambassador for fear, but these people are sick. So
yeah.
I think it's important that this is coming out. I mean, we've already seen in the past, I think it was 3 years ago, that there was a movie that came out about child trafficking. And there's a lot of stuff coming out about it. But obviously, a lot of it is trying to be silenced or censored, because people that are related to it don't want to.
And that's why I think that the way that our entire system works, which I know you feel the same exact way about this, is, you know, putting you in that box, making you think that, you know, following the rules, I've heard you say following the rules and thinking that this is what you're supposed to do and not teaching kids critical thinking or to question anything is like, you know, our system is set up in a way where you go to school, you sit in a desk, you follow rules. If you're thinking doing anything other than just, what if you learn better hands-on? What if you're better at learning visually? What if, you know, no, but you have to do these things this way. Otherwise you're not a good robot. You know, you're not doing a great job at just following along. And by teaching kids that, you know, you have to always listen to authority, I'm not saying to be a total rebel and a bad person and a bad-hearted person. You know, as long as kids have a good heart and they're caring about others, but it's like, why not? You can question things. In my religion, I find what I believe is what I believe. And I don't think you have to go to a specific place to show that off to people. I don't feel like religion should be something that you're parading around and telling people what a great religious person you are, but it's your condition to think that if you don't do the things everyone else is doing, you're not following the rules. You're not just like everybody else, but I don't want to be like everybody else.
Any structure that tries to limit, to structure you a certain procedure of behavior, a certain social conduct, a certain social code. And if you don't do this, then you are not that. Then, and you can find this anywhere. That kind of structure for me is already something that you should critically observe and decide what's good for you. Because that is collectivism. That is a way to put you into a group. And if you are not obeying what the group is doing, if you don't participate in the group think, then you are, something is wrong with you. And I reject that. I mean, it doesn't matter in which area, even in Bitcoin, by the way. I'm sorry, but not all Bitcoiners have to be the same or want the same or behave the same or promote the same stuff. You know, to be honest, when you said before, like for you, home is Bitcoin, like I'm glad for you because a lot of the Bitcoiners I meet are not home for me. You know what I mean? Like I meet people that all they care about is how much money they've made and what kind of investment asset this is. And I don't know. And they also want you to be this group think. And sorry, I don't subscribe to any of that. In fact, I went to physically went to meet someone who would interview me to this Bitcoin podcast. And he didn't even do his background check, like you said, like his homework. He didn't even know who I am. Now, it's not that I'm anyone special, but if you're, if you've got a podcast and you're an interviewer, like the minimum that you can do is kind of do your homework.
The reason you're doing the podcast is because you're interested in people. You want
I know.
To know
he started asking me just before we're starting to roll and film. He's like, so tell me about yourself. And I'm like, what? Before we even roll. And I'm like, it's not like part of the podcast. Like he really didn't know who I am. So I told him, why did you invite me if you don't know who I was? He said, well, I saw you wrote an article in Bitcoin Magazine. I said, so? He said, how did you get there? I said, what do you mean? Like, that's what I do. I'm a journalist. So, but, you know, he had one thing in mind and he didn't care about anything else. And then as I start, I told him, you know what? I'll tell you a little bit about me so you know who I am. And I did. And then he like put one and one together and he goes, so maybe you're one of those people. So just so you know, no talking about COVID and vaccines and all that stuff on my podcast. And I'm like, sorry, like, are you pre-censoring me? Like, are you telling me what to say and what not to say? Right. I'm sorry, I don't need this. And I took my stuff and I left.
Did you? That's awesome.
I did. I was like, fuck off, you know? And
yes.
And
that's
this
amazing.
Is like a Bitcoin podcast, right?
Yeah.
And I told him, this is a Bitcoin podcast. I can't talk about, you know, CBDC and money and Bitcoin and all that. But, you know, here you
just
are telling
chills.
Me, yeah, not to be myself. I'm sorry. If I want to say something about COVID that is related to this topic, I will, because this has been a big part of our lives in the last few years. And if you think it's not, then you live in La La Land. And I'm not participating in your game.
Yeah. They're putting you in the box right away. The podcasts are about learning about people and figuring out what you're like.
Yeah. And look, I totally respect, you know, if you want to bring something specific and you want me to talk about that, no problem. But do not censor me about other things that are important to me. And I told him, to be honest, I didn't even intend to talk about COVID. But the fact that you are now bringing it up just pisses me off more. And I do want to talk about it now because of what you said. So anyway, I walked off and he was like, no, come back. You don't need to be upset. Let's do it anyway. And
this
I'm like,
was in person, or I forgot. Was it in person?
It was in person. Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
I came back and
cooler.
I did it. But my friends who know me, who have watched this interview, know that I was so pissed off as I was doing it. They can tell because I'm very transparent. Like what you see is what you get. It's hard for me to hide how I'm feeling. So they could see that I was very pissed off as I was answering his questions, but I still did it. And it was a good one because I was outraged. And oftentimes when I am outraged. Like, it comes out really well.
Yeah, so you do your best work under pressure. Yeah. But no, that's really cool to hear, and actually to see the kind of person you are. You know, you're the kind of person who values certain things. You value that you get to know your guests. Like, I want to know my guests, whether it's a large account or somebody well-known, or if it's somebody that nobody knows. I like to get to know people, just like I like to get to know my clients.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think both you and I, when we have podcasts, we and many other people I know who have podcasts, they treat their podcast as a very honorable, respectful stage. And they would, you know, when you look at something with proper dignity and integrity, you will do the work to make sure that your product comes out really well. And when you do what you do for money, fame, reputation, I don't know, control, then it's fiat world once again, and your deliverable will be on par.
I want to interview this person because they were in a Bitcoin magazine article.
I come from marketing. I know what this is. Like, when I, you know, I've been 25 years in marketing. There was this time, I think it was 10, 12 years ago, when the whole podcasting scene started blowing up. Marketeers everywhere were like calling out any business, any CEO, anyone who wants to do better in business to set up their own podcast, because it was like, this is the next up and coming channel that if you don't have it, then you're just leaving money on the table for someone else to come in and dominate your space. So it was very, I know a lot about podcasting in terms of a marketing channel, and I was in B2B marketing. So almost any business that wanted to up their game would open their own podcast and start talking in the hope of taking the market share of their specific industry so they could, you know, get the eyeballs, get the leads, da, da, da. I know what it means from a business perspective, from a revenue perspective, from a, you know, from a lead generation and lead capturing perspective. But if you are an independent podcaster, or you represent, I don't know, like you opened your podcast because of Bitcoin, for example, and all you care about is the money you're going to make, or the sponsors you're going to bring, or the whatever other fiat objective that you have. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't be making money, especially if you're independent. For sure, everyone needs to make money and live, right? But if that is your main goal, then yeah.
Yeah. It shouldn't be. And I feel, oh my God, you are right on track with what I believe. You were in not only marketing background for how long, you said 20 years? You were a computer.
Yeah, 20.
Computer programmer.
Yeah, I used to work as a computer programmer at the beginning of my journey. I had my bachelor's degree in computer science and worked for several years as a programmer, programming video games for Nintendo,
really?
Xbox, PlayStation.
What kind of games?
SpongeBob SquarePants was
really
one of them. And there was a bike game, dirt bike game.
I'm going to tell my kids later.
Yeah, there were several games, whatever. It was like kids' games. But that was so cool, because that was like beginning of the 2000s. Yeah, 2002 to 2005. It was early days in terms of tech. There were hardly any laptops back then. I mean, there were, but they were so bulky and big. And when I was in university, like, few years before that, I remember like 2000 2001, I had one course with this professor who showed us mobile phones, and we were learning about programming for mobile phones, and we were kind of like, you know, dude, this is so this is like such a bad experience, so wonky. And he was like, you guys don't understand anything. This is going to be the future. And this is before the iPhone, right? This is 2001.
But we're telling learning about
how
this.
To program like websites on mobile phones using WAP protocol and HTTP on mobile and things like that. And we're like, you know, maybe you're right, but we just can't see it. Like before something comes, it's so hard to imagine what it's going to be like. And 3 years later, 4 years later, you started getting the first iPhones. And year after year, the smartphones came in and Samsung, you know, Android. It was such a revolution to be part of. And actually know how to write code for these devices. I never did it. I mean, my only mobile programming was through my work with like Sony PSP and Nintendo, like had a dual screen kind of console, small console, but it wasn't like on real mobile phones. On mobile phones, I did only a little bit of work in university, but it was really a fascinating time to be around all that. But it was quite clear for me that that's not where my passion is.
But I think that, like, you experiencing that and you being there for that part of that transition of technology is kind of cool, because that may have been part of the reason why you see Bitcoin and you could see.
Oh, for sure.
You know,
everything. When I look back at my life and old life, what I see is that every period of my life, even if I didn't know at the time why I'm doing it and why it's important, now plays a fucking vital role in my evolution and in who I am today. Like, right. I've been, if I wouldn't learn technology, like study technology and then work for a few years as a programmer, I wouldn't be able to make my way into marketing and business development in tech. And then I wouldn't be able to then become very senior in that industry. And
you were
I wouldn't,
senior. You,
yeah. And then I wouldn't be able to go so quickly into Bitcoin and understand it and kind of find my way in that industry and kind of have a different perspective of this industry as a, you know, global chief marketing officer coming into a tiny, tiny industry. So I have a very different perspective.
You're
you
global.
Know, when you combine that with my values and ideologies, it's like perfect match.
So that's, and I think that's what's so crazy about you is that you were a chief marketing officer for a global tech company.
For several. Not just
several.
One, like I, yeah, because I was when I was relatively early, 34 years old, I was already vice president of marketing of startups. So I was promoted to be a VP of marketing. I was running like global marketing operations around the world, US, Australia, Israel, Europe, like depends on which. I was working for a company that had headquarters in Paris. I was traveling to Paris all the time, managing a team of like 10 people and lots of freelancers and like millions of dollars of budget and doing like really big stuff, like producing big events and traveling around the world, seeing customers and doing a lot of big things, like really early on in the corporate world. When I was 36, I think I was already chief marketing officer and I was getting paid shitloads of fiat, you know, like for a young single mom that was working quite hard. And I was, and I think that I had, and not everyone that I know in the tech industry gets to that level quite young like I did, because I was carrying different types of skills or traits that many people didn't have. And I was also very entrepreneurial. And so alongside being in the corporate world and being a CMO, I also started my own business with two partners, and we set up a community of CMOs, of global CMOs in Israel. And we had, you know, when I left, we were already 150 CMOs in that community. And it was like another business that I had been running for 7 years. I had only left there recently, like a couple of years ago, a year and a half ago. Oh, and that community still runs today. My two partners are still running it. So I was doing many things at the same time. I always had a really big capacity for projects. When I'm passionate about something, I can do a lot. And so I think that everything that I've done had positioned me so perfectly to be where I am today, where I could see myself 42 years old. Today I'm 45, right? But when I was 42, I was like, okay, I can, even if I get fired, even if I leave the corporate world forever, and I was still in there at 42, like by the end of that year, I'd left. But I said, I'll be fine because now I've reached the next level of my game where what I want to do next, or where I see myself next, is in service of humanity and not necessarily in service of another corporation, making money for another CEO or more shareholders or, you know, more customers that need to buy products and all that. Like I'm done with that. I've done it for so long. I've made quite a bit of money. I managed to save. I've had a mentality, even though I was completely fiat, like I always knew how to save and how to be very wise with my money. I did see how I need to transition all my fiat into a safe haven, thank God for Bitcoin, but I was not there yet. But I did say, you know, I'm ready. If this is, whenever this comes, I'm ready for my next phase. And, you know, shortly after that, I was, starting my new role, my new journey, leaving corporate world, leaving my community, leaving everything behind and starting fresh. And then, you know, my son also left home. So like a totally new beginning started, and the podcast and journalism.
You have to know how amazing that is. And I hope that anybody who is listening, who doesn't understand Bitcoin yet, just to see that you had climbed the ranks so quickly in the corporate world, and you know, computer background, marketing background, all these things that got you to where you were. A lot of people would get there and they would still be stuck in that program.
Yeah, and I know many people that are like that. They go, oh no, you know, that honeypot is too sweet. I cannot leave that. I cannot, what am I going to do? How am I going to pay the mortgage? How am I going to make sure, you know, I have a certain standard of living? Now I got used to going to the gym and taking my family twice a year to this holiday overseas. And, you know, I have all this modern lifestyle and the car and my grandma and whatever, you know, what am I going to do? Like, they're so addicted to fiat. They cannot see their lives without it, without the comfort and the convenience that life gives you, where you pay a huge price being a slave of that system and you don't take that into consideration. So I had broken out of all that, and I had decided to just consider a different way of living. It doesn't have to look the same as what it looked for the past 20 years. Now I'm like opening a new page. Yes, it's a change. It's hard. It's going to bring a lot of changes in my life if I do that. But I am trusting myself, just like I trusted myself during COVID when people came and said, you know, do what everyone's doing. Take the jab. You know, be a good girl. Do this, do that. Complies. Yeah. Fuck you.
But you know what?
Any of that. And I trusted myself. And when my dad told me, like, why do you have to be different? Why can you not do what everyone else doing? I was like, because I trust myself. I'm capable of being different, you know? And so
your background as an investigative journalist too, you're looking for answers. So that also led you to make this decision, because now you're an investigative journalist, you know, maybe after the fact, right?
I wasn't before.
Yeah.
So if you tell me a few years ago that I'd be a journalist, I'd laugh at you. I'd like, me?
For you to be in this position, where you are so high ranking, you're making really good money. You know, you're living the lifestyle that people don't normally get to live. They don't get to these points in their life. So for you to be there and then still see the truth from a place of comfort is unreal. Like, you're, you know, because that's not how it, I mean, I don't think a lot of people.
No, but I always felt like this is a recurring theme in my life. I always feel like I, how do you say it? Like a front runner. Yeah. Like I run quickly forward, check the new reality, kind of suss it out, kind of get a feel for it, understand what's happening so that I can go back to everyone else and say, hey, you know what's going, you know what's coming? Like, this is something that I've always had, like from even from primary school when I was just 6-7 years old at school, I always finished work very quickly and went to help other people. And you know, when I was first grade or second grade, I remember they gave me this this project, this task to be a tutor of a boy that was with me in class who was he had some kind of how do you say it in English? Sorry that I don't know.
Like autism, or
yeah, maybe on the spectrum of autism or something like that. He was very slow, and he wasn't like us. You know what I mean? And I would sit with him once or twice a week, I think, during school time, and I would do homework with him, and I would explain stuff to him. That was first grade or second grade, but that was my role. And I took it very seriously, and I've done that. I remember him until today. This is just like, what is it? This is like 40 years ago.
So you wanted to help, and you had that from a kid. You want to like help people through. You want to help them.
I always saw people. I saw like the different souls. I saw even the ones that have a hard time, that is difficult for them. For me, everything was so easy. And that's what I felt again when I was 42. I was like, okay, I managed to get through COVID. I managed to kind of save my son from this madness. I managed to make a lot of money till today and save it. I managed to like build my life. I'm all right. Like, I am fine. Now is my time to put my energy and focus on serving humanity. Now I need to expose all this information to people, like as a job, because I know tech, because I know marketing, because I know content, because I've been doing, because I speak two languages, I've done all that stuff for so many years. Now I can do that.
Leaving that programmed world that you were in and being able to help people and actually having a passion for something is so inspiring. And it's just sad that there's so many people that have that addiction to the fiat lifestyle that they don't ever try to look for an answer because they're comfortable, right? When you're comfortable, you think,
I mean, they are. Let's be accurate here. They are trying to look for an answer, but they're looking in the wrong place.
They keep looking at
how to chase the yield, how to beat the inflation, how to beat taxes. But there is another way, a totally different way.
You're so right about that. Yeah, they already know they have to try to beat inflation. They already know they are doing it.
They're like, which stock should I invest in? What do you think about buying a property in the Dominican Republic? What do you think about blah, blah, you know?
Oh, God, you're so right. Oh, yeah, put it in gold. They do.
Everyone wants to help themselves, especially as the economic situation becomes worse. They do want to help themselves, but they go back to the familiar. They don't want to open up. And when you come and tell them, you know, there's another way, they'll go, oh, okay, which way? You tell them something about it. And either their automatic pilot will come into play and they'll start with their resistance, or they will find excuses for why it's too hard, because it means that you have to change things in your life. And I'm not just talking about Bitcoin, like Bitcoin, gold, like anything that would pull you out of the current system, even like go research what you need to do to protect yourself in terms of pensions, your pension fund? Like, how does it operate and what can you do to do things differently? Like, people, when they see the amount of work and study that they need to put into it, they're like, too much.
I'm lazy.
So when you're lazy, you get what you deserve.
Yeah. And the thing about COVID is it helped a lot of people realize, because I was not as strong-minded as you. I was manipulated. I watched the media. I looked at the news. I was afraid. I was suckered. I thought, oh my God, you know, I was wiping down my groceries when they'd come home. I was terrified. And then when I had to go back to work, it was all the healthcare workers were the people that were the emergency responders, the grocery store workers, and hairdressers had to go back eventually, because it was like, guess what? Everyone's hair is down to their freaking shoulders. So we need haircuts again. So I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to go and not just work in a public place, but I'm going to put my hands and be within your 6-foot bubble. I'm like, are they trying to kill me? So I was so freaking scared that I was like, well, I can't even keep my hands. I can't be 6 feet away. This is ridiculous. So but I was watching the news and I was terrified. And I didn't know I was manipulated. I'm not going to lie. I thought I was scared.
No, I totally understand that. Mm-hmm. Most people were. It's so hard to break through the propaganda. I actually tweeted something today about it. If you go to my Twitter feed, you can see that there's this Belgium guy who boasts about how he created the most effective propaganda in Belgium with the, what was it, the swine flu a few years back. And he gives the playbook for how to create the successful propaganda. Propaganda is very hard to break through. It's mind control. Right. So, and you did eventually, you did see through the bullshit. Doesn't matter how long it took you, but you know, even if you paid a price for it, calling it out at a later stage is better than not admitting that you were wrong. The integrity to say, I was fooled, I was wrong, I was manipulated. Great. You have the ability to open a new page.
It was always weird for me because I always found it skeptical and people were like, oh, that's conspiracy. But whenever I started to question how they said that the virus came from the market in Wuhan from a bat, and then they said that there was a lab in Wuhan, it's like, well, obviously then it's from the lab, right? Like, it was just escape from the lab. It didn't just, you know, that's like an easy connection to make. Like, how are people thinking this?
Well, to be honest, I think that that's a psyop as well. I think that that's bullshit too, because like what the White House is doing now, it's complete psyop. Because the point is not the COVID virus. The COVID virus is known for like 20 years. It's not about a lab leak.
Yeah,
it's about the jabs, adverse reactions and damages. That's what it's about. It's about the fake vaccine. It's not even a vaccine.
Sometimes
so they want to overtake your attention from that into the COVID virus. That's not what's important here.
But what I think sometimes, like, this might be crazy, but I don't know what your thoughts are on this because I just have a weird brain. But my idea is, I had been through some stuff in the last couple of years, and I had seen family, like my father-in-law was very sick and he had cancer. And he ended up passing away from it. But when he was sick, he was going to the hospital, one of the best hospitals where I'm like in my state, and it was packed. There was no room. He would be in the ER and there was no room in the top cancer hospital in the state. It was filled, and he couldn't get out of ICU one time to get a regular room for days and days, almost, I think almost a week at one point. So you're telling me the top COVID hospital in this state is full and there's no care for people. So sometimes I started to think that maybe, you know how they always say that, you know, corporations and pharmaceutical companies don't want cures to come out because then they won't make money off all the medicine that they give you.
Of course. First of all, the COVID deaths that are COVID deaths, they're not COVID deaths. They're like deaths with comorbidity that the different hospitals and clinics would get money in order to label people as dying from COVID, but they had comorbidities. So that is like the easiest one. The second one is the fact that when people did come to the hospitals, they were either mistreated or not treated to make their situation worse. And when they were treated with things like midazolam or remdesivir, which made them die. And so they were killing people. So, and if you want to know about turbo cancers, for sure, go follow the whole topic of SV40, which is a gene that has been found in the COVID vaccines that induces cancer. And like,
because I'm not gonna lie, I've had my paranoia, you know, that my father-in-law got sick after COVID.
Sure,
after
many people did. I know many people that died after the vaccine. Yep, or like heart damages. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I definitely had that.
This is concealed. That is the real deal, and that's what you would never see the White House rebranding their website to say. No, because they have a role in that too. So
the other thing is, let's say this COVID thing caused people to get very sick, where they were like, okay, now we're going to give people the vaccine. So my crazy idea is, okay,
and what a coincidence that Pfizer just acquired a company called Seagen for $43 billion that boosts access to cancer drugs.
Oh, so I'm onto something.
What
maybe.
A coincidence.
Okay. Ooh, okay.
To acquire cancer drug maker Trillium for $2.3 billion. They bought two companies in the last couple of years. What, one in 2023 and one in 2021. Cancer mystery as cases rise among younger people around the world. All Pfizer, thanks to Pfizer.
Look at you. See, I'm having these thoughts and you're just fact checking and finding out info right now live, you know. So
there are so many great people to follow and learn more about it. I mean, I'm just like nothing. Mary, what's her name? Mary.
Send me
some of
these.
Boden. She's a medical doctor, independent. She was just on Tucker Carlson. She's unreal. Actually, in BTC Prague, we're going to have someone that I had connected the organizers with. He is a Bitcoiner, but he's a genome expert, a genetic expert, a scientist. His name is Kevin McKernan, and he's one of the people behind the revelations of the gene SV40 in the contaminated vaccines. He's going to be speaking at BTC Prague about distributed and decentralized health. People like Jack Cruz are doing that too. They're Bitcoiners. They're in health.
But the thing connecting to that Pfizer acquiring these companies is they had to like cut the red tape to allow the mRNA vaccines to go public and to go worldwide. So maybe this is like the ultimate, like, hey, if we have a way to genetically modify vaccines to cure cancer, but they won't be allowed for 10, 20, 30 years, however long, so then we can say, oh, but now that these vaccines were already approved and mRNA is already approved, now we can tweak it and just convert it over to cancer therapy.
Well, didn't you see I don't remember his name. He's one of the new people in the Trump administration giving a speech a couple months ago talking about how you can personalize vaccines depending on people's profile, specifically mRNA vaccines. So yes, COVID was just the foot in the door for this whole world of mRNA, which has not been properly tested, which
a fast track.
The trials that did happen were on mice or monkeys and they all died. Like there were no human testing. Like the human testing was COVID. Israel was one of the countries that participated in that big clinical trial. Our prime minister is actually boasting about how he sold off our data to FDA and Pfizer, and based on the results of Israel, then they got the emergency authorization approval.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, mRNA is like what they want to bring through the door in order to continue a new trajectory of biotechnology vaccinations. Very, very dangerous. There are even more dangerous stuff coming out of Japan now with like self-replicating mRNA stuff that is like it's like a non-stop mechanism. When you inject it, it just keeps replicating on and on, never stops. It's like crazy stuff that they are experimenting with. This is not proper science. Super dangerous.
Like
brave scientists are talking against it. So
with so many sicknesses that happen and a lot of the stuff in countries like America, where they have for corporate greed reasons, where they want to increase shelf life, they fill all the products with all the chemicals in the food. So people a lot of times get sick just from the environment. And if they were to just change that and stop the corporations from trying to just have better margins, if we want to cure cancer, let's start with getting the poison out of our food. But no, let's just like create a vaccine and push through. If we got a cure for cancer, and I'll take another
mRNA.
Yeah,
it's insane. And the fact that this is still being given to babies in the U.S. now. The COVID injections are being given to babies, and it hasn't been taken off the market yet. It's insane.
I haven't even taken the flu shot since COVID because I thought, well, how do I know they're not putting that inside the flu shot?
Insane.
I don't know.
Sure. You're talking about health. You're talking about food. So it's in pharma. Obviously, it's in food, but it's everywhere else. It's in tech. We have toxic tech coming out, a tech that fuels wars. It's fiat shenanigans all across the spectrum. So tech is fueling wars, which is fueling more and more weaponry, more and more military industrial complexes, more fiat creation to kill more people, to subject more colonies or countries to each other, to continue the hegemony or the empires. Sitting up there on top of the mountain, looking down at the peasants saying, okay, this is our new world order. This is how things are going to look like. We're going to kind of decide for you what your new life or reality is going to look like. And we are in a very, very important decade right now where things are shifting gear from 2020 to 2030. We are undergoing a change, and the way it's going to look like by the end of this decade has a lot to do with us and with our bravery, with our pushback, with our ability to learn and find new ways of living. So I really, you know, I'm like rereading The Creature of Jekyll Island now. And today I bumped into episode 6 about the New World Order. And it's just insane to learn history again and see the kind of monetary order that was done in 1944 and then 1971 and then 1994 with the World Trade Organization. And I have to read you that part. I was just like, like in there just before our talk. Because this is just so relevant for now. It's insane. Like it says here, by early 1994, the drift toward the New World Order had become a rush. On April 15th, 1994, the government of Morocco placed a full-page ad in the New York Times celebrating the creation of World Trade Organization, which was formed by the signing of General Agreement of Tariffs and Trade, or GATT, which took place in the Moroccan city of Marrakesh. While Americans were still being told that GATT was merely a trade agreement, internationalists were celebrating a much larger concept. The ad spelled it out in unmistakable terms. This is the ad. I'm reading you the ad. 1944, Bretton Woods, the IMF, and the World Bank. 1945, San Francisco, the United Nations. 1994, Marrakesh, the World Trade Organization the World Trade Organization. History knows where it is going. The World Trade Organization, the third pillar of the New World Order, along with the United Nations and the International Monetary Fund, the IMF. It's like the ad says, like the World Trade Organization, which is in charge of putting together the tariffs and the trade agreements between countries, is one pillar of the world, the New World Order. This is like, and that's like people look at what's happening today and they don't connect it to history. This is just like, people need to understand that governments, all these globalist organizations, all these unions and secret societies, and you know, the CFR, the Club of Rome, all of these organizations, obviously the World Trade Organization, the World Economic Forum, the WHO, all of these are operating on multi-decade plans, sometimes centuries. They have very long-term view. We as individuals have short-term view. We only see tomorrow, next week, next month, maybe 2 years, you know, 10 years, like our best case scenario, because we have to like feed our family. We have to make ends meet. We have to make money. We have to live. We have to take care of our kids. So we have a very short-term prism of life, whereas those people and those organizations, they see generations forward, and they hand over those plans, those agendas from one generation to another. So if you read the Creature of Jekyll Island again, you'll hear again how JFK was part of putting together the plan for the World Trade Organization, and how this whole view of communism was a view that was favored by the West as well, but just in a different way, through Fabianism and gradualism, rather than putting it through communism, which is like very short term. And so like the West is socialistic as well, but the way to get there is different than the way of totalitarian regimes like China and Russia. But it's the same game. They're all playing the same game. They all want like one ruling mechanism or apparatus to be operating. That's why we're seeing today these enforcements of vaccine passports, of now biometric measures in airports, of like everyone's doing the same thing. CBDCs, all games are being played at the same time. Pandemics, climate change measures, like they're all bringing it out at the same time. They have deadlines. I mean, Agenda 21 came first in 1994 in the Rio agreements. I think it was in New York by the United Nations that most countries around the world have signed it. And then Agenda 21 transformed into Agenda 2030, and the deadline is 2030. And so they have actual real deadlines that they have to comply to, because they all signed the treaties. They also have a plan for 2050 in place already. We just don't know it. By the way, you can Google it. You'll find a website about the 2050 plan. They have to do this because they have someone above them that goes, you know, have you done what you're supposed to do? And if not, then we have to punish you in some way. They have this socialistic measure of and the countries that don't do enough, they pay, you know, whatever, dividends or carbon taxes to other countries. It all goes through the World Bank and the IMF. It all goes through the United Nations. It's like, this is all in place. The only thing people need to know that this is just playing out right now. What we are seeing is just this whole thing, this whole mammoth of global agendas playing out.
Is that where they meet in Davos, the IMF?
Davos is the World Economic Forum, the WEF. IMF is the International Monetary Fund. Okay. IMF is the enslaver of the world, because it lends money through the World Bank to places that don't have it, like African countries or other poor countries, and it enslaves them through
high interest rates,
rigorous fiat regimes.
Yeah, so that's next on my reading list, is The Creature of Jekyll Island.
If you want to learn more about the IMF, read the Confessions of Economic Hitman.
In fact, somebody told me to read that. Yes, I have that on my list.
Yeah, or you can listen to it. And the author of the book is going to be speaking at Vegas.
Nice. Awesome. I'm going to definitely want to read that before Vegas too then. So now I got two immediate books that I'm going to read. But the other thing that I think is really funny is I don't know if you watch many shows. I don't watch too much TV, but I like to mention whenever I do see a TV show that I think reminds me of a shift happening, because so many people have been, you know, with media entertainment, there's a lot of like a veil over what's really going on. Like nobody really talks about real stuff, but there's a show that came out that I just started watching yesterday. It's called Friends and Neighbors with John Hamm. That's everything he needs in his life, working like a dog though. And then one day they decide to fire him because they want to keep his client list and whatever happens. And then he has this whole account that he wants access to because it was his investment accounts. And they said, sorry, we're not giving you that because it's no longer yours. And he goes, well, that's my money. And they're like, well, anything that you don't control is not really yours. So it just made me think of that whole saying, not your keys, not your coins. The kind of idea that in the entertainment world, that you're seeing shows like this with a popular actor like John Hamm, who's kind of showing people that the system is rigged against even people like him. And just to show people that you don't really own these assets. You think you own them until you don't. Maybe people like your show, for example, your podcast, how you want to show the truth. You want to share your voice. You want to speak your mind. Who knows who you've reached out to? Who knows who's seen your show? It could have been somebody who's a writer and they said, you know what? This shit is real. This stuff is going on. I'm just speculating on everything, but I'm just saying, you never know who you're going to touch with your words and your voice. So by you sharing what you do, you could have opened the eyes to somebody in an entertainment industry type field who now they're starting to wake up and tell other people through story the type of shit that is wrong. That whole gradually then suddenly phase, I think it comes from the entertainment industry.
Sure. I think on the most part, Hollywood and the entertainment industry is very much rigged. And there is also a lot of use of that industry, the music industry as well, to kind of introduce concepts and ideas into our lives in a very soft way because it came from a movie. So you like talk about it as if like a semi-real thing, you know, it's like I've seen it in a movie, so it's not real, you know, it came out somewhere. So there is this use or abuse of that medium or of that industry in order to introduce concepts into our lives. Not everything obviously is like that, but many things are. And we also see like crazy resemblance between things that actually do happen in real life to things that are things that are in the movies or in shows, and we call that predictive programming. Like The Simpsons, for example, show you shitloads of stuff that is happening, and they have aired it way before it actually happened. So one is, you know, critical ones looking at that, asking how is that possible. So I think that a lot of messages are being subliminally put into place inside these mediums, which is interesting. But I also want to add to what you said before about how, you know, specifically that example you gave of how that guy is getting the message of, sorry, you know, what's yours is not yours anymore. And it's like, too bad, like we're firing you and we're taking what's yours or what you think is yours. So exactly the same thing, I think, is at play at the moment around the world, but we can see real signs of it in the EU, for example, where you find the president of the European Union, Ursula von der Leyen, calling for a new program called Rearm Europe, where they plan to, the actual plan is going to require €800 billion, and they are setting up this new entity, this new body that is called Savings and Investments Union, which aims to redirect €10 trillion in private savings to fund military expansion. So redirect. It's not like we are creating money out of nothing and putting it out there. It's a savings and investments union that is going to take people's savings or investments, or at least a chunk of it, and redirect it towards funding wars, military expansion, probably NATO, right? This is all in the public sphere. It's being said. It's going to be done. And so people in Europe, if you hear this and you haven't been hedging some of your savings or investments into other tools other than the fiat monetary system, then you're in trouble. You know, like, so this is happening today, these days. You're talking about a TV show that you've seen? Yeah, sure. But it's also happening in real time.
I wonder, it's like, even though it's like subliminal messaging in different ways, sometimes negative, sometimes positive, but I feel like in some ways, because people see things playing out, because I didn't realize that that's happening, right?
That is happening. Maybe it was all over. I wrote about it in Bitcoin Magazine. about how the European Union is prepping itself for CBDCs because they said they're going to launch it in October 2025. Coincidentally, they also announced this savings and investment union that needs to be funded with redirection of €10 trillion.
How important is it that you're doing this work? Because you are investigative reporting the heck out of this and you're sharing what you're finding and you're exposing more of the things that even though it is going on, maybe it's not out there for people to find easily or something. But the fact that you're doing this, I believe, you know, people are seeing it. It's in Bitcoin Magazine.
Nasdaq.com also published the same article from Bitcoin Magazine.
Yeah. Your voice is Bitcoin Magazine. It's on NASDAQ. It's being shared. It's your voice and your reporting on these problems that you're seeing that are going on that are removing people's freedoms and taking what's theirs and reinvesting it. That is a humongous problem. People like you that find these truths can influence somebody somewhere in the world. You don't know who is seeing it.
I get those messages from people. They tell me. A guy from Denmark, 68 years old, had approached me after reading and following and the podcast and the articles and everything. And he's like, okay, how do I buy Bitcoin? Set him up with Relay in Europe. Yeah. It's like you go through Relay because we talked about many different ways and that was the right way for him. So it does make a real direct impact and influence on people. And I'm so glad that I get to do that. Even if it's like one person at a time, I feel like I'm the channel. I'm just like channeling these messages. These are not spiritual, but sometimes I do channel spiritual messages. But in that case, this is completely useful information for people to have in order to protect and hedge themselves. So
people trust corporations and banks way too much. People think my money is safe because it's in a bank.
Or government.
Or it's in the government. Yeah. My money is safe because I trust my government. Why do you trust your government?
The pensions, they're not going to touch the pensions. Yeah. Just like they didn't touch the mortgages during 2008.
Yeah. And that's why people think, like I saw somebody comment recently on one of our Bitcoin Army posts saying, oh, so something you're going to trust something that's not backed by the U.S. government and the credit system. I'm like, do you know that we're in like a credit bubble right now? Just like we had a housing market bubble and they were selling, those mortgage-backed loan securities, you know, and they were doing that. Now they're doing, now the credit is ballooning out of control.
That's the thing that people are still looking for, trust. And I'm not saying trust is a very important concept in our lives. We do need to trust things. It's not like I'm not encouraging anyone to lose trust in humanity or in life, but you need to know where to put your trust. And if you still put your trust in the establishment, in the government, in the banks, whatever, and I'm not saying they cannot re-earn the trust. They can, but depending on their actions, and you have to be vigilant and brave to not.
And that's why I think it's people funny. Like when people ask me, well, what if you lose your seed phrase? You either need to trust yourself that you're responsible with those words, or you trust a bank or somebody.
Trust yourself comes after taking responsibility. First, be responsible. First, be like, learn what it means to really discover responsibility, because you have given your power away. You only trust another third party. And you don't trust yourself anymore. So spend some time to understand why. Why is that? Why is the power not with you? And who have you given your power away? Not just in money, in everything in your life. People that trust blindly other third parties also do that in their lives with some relationships, with some, I don't know, other institutions. They give too much of their power away. It won't be just in one place. It will be in many places. So that's where Bitcoin changes you. That's where it invites you to take a look at your sovereignty and your responsibility in your life everywhere, not just in money.
Yeah, because you're right. You ask yourself the question, if I don't trust myself to write down 12 or 24 words on pieces of paper and keep them safe in a plastic or whatever you want to do. There's stamp seed. There's different things. But if you can't trust yourself to just keep words safe and know where they are and you might lose them, that's not a very hard thing to do. You don't have to go to take a college course and then trust yourself to understand it and pass the class and pay tons of money. That's not, like, writing down words is simple. You know, it's like, that should be something that you shouldn't be that afraid of to do.
I totally understand the fear, because at the beginning, it is weird to start doing something that you haven't done before, but that shouldn't stop you from relearning or reteaching yourself how to find responsibility again. So start small. And do it with one wallet and do it with a little bit of money and then learn and then train.
Be more confident, you know, like, believe in yourself. Think like you did. You believed in yourself to leave your career and go do what you wanted to do to share this. You trusted your own judgment and what you thought was right. But it comes with small stuff like relationships. Like you said, you don't have to always go ask your best friend. You should be able to understand that something is wrong and try to take a look at those little things. And then, you know, you can make different decisions. But you're right. Make mistakes, like download a wallet, write down the words, make another wallet. You know, not like you created this wallet. Now this is your one shot at creating a Bitcoin wallet. You can create so many wallets. Like, you're not going to screw it up.
And if your problem is with, you feel not confident to do it on your own, maybe you have an issue with asking for help. Ask for help. Do it with someone. Have someone hold your hand as you do it. For the first time, I did. I asked for help. But it's not easy for certain people.
It's not easy for people to ask for help. It's not easy for people to admit that they're wrong or change anything in their life. People don't like change. I feel like people are very scared of change, and they think that anything that's new is just terrifying. So they'd rather... isn't that the programming?
That is the biggest illusion, Stacey.
That is the
only thing constant in life is change.
Yes. and then you have to learn to be comfortable with that. But people are so stuck in this box. And then that's why when something happens, like a crisis in the world, you freak out because you're like, something is changing. And now I'm terrified even more, which now in turn creates another way to control you, because now you have more fear. And
because you've been protecting yourself all your life to avoid any breakdown, any change, any breakthrough out of a breakdown. You've been avoiding that. And that is such valuable, useful training for your soul, for your mind, for your body. If you are exercising in changing stuff in your life and adapting to new realities, you become so much stronger. You have such strong conviction. You have more confidence. You have more trust in yourself. But you have to understand, first of all, that life is all energy, and energy is changing all the time. Energy is waves. It comes and goes. And if you don't accept life as an ever-changing energy, then you are trying to hold on to this fixated concept of life that doesn't exist. Life is energy. Life is changing all the time.
Yeah. And it does feel like you're fighting nature in that way. But so, yeah, I think it's cool that anyone's voice who's talking about this stuff can impact anybody. And we don't know who that could be. I'm still getting used to this. I'm not good at podcasts yet. I'm just learning.
Great.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So let's see. So I wanted to ask you. So one thing is, you grew up in Australia, but you live in Israel.
No, I grew up in Israel, but I moved to Australia when I was 20 years old.
To study.
Okay. Yeah. To university.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's where you did your computer sciences stuff. Mm-hmm. Okay, because I was like thinking, did you grow up in Australia and then move to Israel?
No, I grew up here. I was born here in Israel, and I'd served the army, and then after the army, I traveled to Australia, and then I stayed there for 6 years, and met my boyfriend, who then became my husband and the father of my son, and today my ex-husband, and. We this also, for many years, I didn't know why I had chosen that path. But today I know, because I needed to create another possibility, another option for my son to not necessarily continue our automatic lineage here. And so my son did choose. He chose to go to Australia and move to live with his dad. Not that Australia is perfect. It's got its problems, but it's probably better than the Middle East right now.
Yeah, so. I can't imagine like how it actually is living out there right now. I'm sure that it's not everywhere. Like it's probably bigger than it seems on a map, but I'm sure it's like really scary to be like you don't know what could go on day to day.
Well,
And you don't
not
want
for
them to be
me.
around there.
It's not scary for me, but it's very intense. Like the energies are very intense. People are very much exhausted and mind controlled. Their propaganda is very pervasive, and it's very hard to have non-mainstream opinions around here. And people are quite violent, and not violent in a physical. I mean, it's not easy at all. And plus, not to speak about what's happening, so many atrocities, and hardly people talk about that or pay any attention to that here in Israel. And that is also a very tough reality for me because I see them and I care, and the last thing I want is war. And the fact that I don't see Palestinians the same way as most Israelis is not easy being here, also as a journalist, because they go after journalists who speak not in
Central.
favor of the government or the IDF or things that the establishment is doing.
It's
And they're
almost
actually going
like
after journalists in Gaza. Like a lot of them are being assassinated. And that is a very difficult reality to.
because you care about all people. You feel like if that was your family on the other side of the map,
Absolutely.
so you think about both sides. You feel bad for everybody,
Yeah, I
that's
always say I'm on team human. I'm not on team Israel or team Palestine. I'm on team human. I see the
right.
human there, and it
Yeah.
breaks my heart to see suffering on both sides. And this war is just going to continue because they have an interest in it. The fiat machine just wants it to keep going because there are hidden agendas behind it. And so the way it looks to me, even with the new administration in the US, is that it's being pushed forward to continue. If it stops, but I don't see it happening right now. This is an $80 billion project for rehabilitating Gaza. And you're gonna see contractors like BlackRock and I don't know, maybe even Musk and many other companies coming into this space, maybe Palantir, I don't know, to install their smart cities, smart technologies into this new place that they are going to build, highly controlled on any level.
Is it already in the works, or are they talking
I mean
about this, or?
I mean, if you Google Gaza, $80 billion, you already see a lot of articles about it. So it's out there that this is the next up and coming project. Just like, in the Ukraine, they were talking about, okay, BlackRock is now coming in to rebuild big parts of the Ukraine because of the war. This is the stage that we're in. It's the rebuilding stage,
Yeah,
right? The
isn't that funny that you
rehabilitation,
think?
just like after every crisis or war or emergency, it pushes the economy forward because you now have to put a lot of new money into rehabilitation projects.
The fiat system that just loves war because they make money on war. They love destruction because it's like you just have a straight bulldozing. Like, you're just bulldozing the area. You also are getting rid of a lot of the population so you can build
Yeah.
these new cities with less people, like you said. And you're seeing it, you're living there.
It's an inevitable path for them because that's like the only way that life can keep going, They don't see any other way. And that is frustrating. Yeah, it's not easy seeing all that, but to be honest, that's why I don't report about it anymore and I don't even follow closely the local politics and the local updates about the war and everything because if I would, I think I would lose my mind. I think I would be so mentally exhausted that I want to guard my energy and my soul. So I try to stay away from that, but it's enough to see here and there an update. Like today someone sent me this horrible video or article about this journalist in Gaza that was bombed with her family. Like nine members of her family and herself are gone. And yeah, it's not popular to talk about that. And I'm not saying that they are, that there are no terrorists amongst them. There are bad people everywhere, right? There is evil everywhere. I'm very well aware of that. Like, the dark forces are everywhere. So it's not like one side is good, one side is bad. This is a reflection of what's actually happening inside of us. Like, yeah, the polarity that we are witnessing is just a manifestation and a visualization of what is happening inside the human soul. And it is everywhere. And if people cannot see it in themselves and call it out and try to change something, then it will overtake. And it overtakes in many places. And just like, as I mentioned in the beginning, you know, the all the stuff with the children, it's everywhere. You be sure that you'll find this in any type of religion / community / nationality / and it's just another way of when you hold on to the group construct that it comes from and you put the emphasis on that rather than on the good and evil in the human psyche or the human soul, then you are just another product, in my opinion, of the propaganda of divide and rule, to divide us between different groups, to try and make us hate each other and fight each other and blanket label everyone as the same. You know, all Jews are this, all Muslims are that, all this is just like the easiest propaganda. And so many people are falling for it. And I'm not saying that there are no bad people in this group or that group. Of course there are.
Yes.
But you gotta ascend and transcend over that and just try to look at things from a different perspective to understand that it's everywhere and it's inside of you. And, you know, you have to be brave enough to call it out everywhere you see it.
You realizing that these things are the way they are, sadly, and these things are pushing forward the way they are because that's the way things work in this fiat world. You stopped reporting on this topic, but what you are doing is you're focusing your energy on that whole peaceful protest is what Bitcoin is. So what you're doing is very important because you say, okay, I'm not going to report on it. I'm not going to risk my life. I know that, you know, you're really not going to change it from the inside of the system. So what you're trying to do is wake people up to the fact that the fiat system that is broken, that's causing these issues.
First of all, holding the notion that this is a highly nuanced reality that we live in, and that it's not black and white, and that that war, so-called war, exists in almost any area of our life, including our mental and spiritual capacity. The best way to bring about change is by introspecting and looking inside and starting with changing something within yourself. And then you can ripple out that change to your environment. And I know that that is how it works because I'm experiencing it, because it works with me. So I think it can work with everyone. It's not easy, but it's, you know, it's the most rewarding, quote unquote, game there is, because if we want to see a difference in the world, then we have to do proof of work. We have to do the work ourselves on ourselves.
I love it. That's so perfect. That's the ripple effect. And even if it's in you noticing that you are even one person at a time making a change, you know, that's what's important. So I wanted to just finish with, because I could talk to you for probably days at a time, because we can talk about everything and forever. So I just can't wait to talk to you again someday, because you're just incredible. I can't wait to hear you speak in Vegas. But I want to let you to let people know, I will link things down below, but just let people know where to find you.
So I think the best place for daily updates is on Twitter /X. If you are on Noster, then I'm on Primal. And if you're interested in articles and podcasts, then my blog, which is a flat.blog. And my podcast, You're the Voice, on any podcasting platform. I'm kind of everywhere.
That's amazing. I can't wait to read more of those articles. And I want to read the Jekyll Island book and the, what did you say the second one was called, that's going to be speaking at the conference?
Confessions of Economic Hitman.
That's it. Okay. I can't wait to see you speak, and I can't wait to see you soon. Thank you for taking the time today. I really appreciate it. And you're an amazing person. So thank you for doing this.
Thank you, Stacey.
All right. Have a great day. Thank you.